This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Outdoor Edge knows that providing a freezer full of meat is part of the reason we all hunt. And what better way to bring it full circle than to process your own wild game? Outdoor Edge provides a full lineup of traditional and replaceable blade hunting knives and complete wild game processing kits to bring your wild game from the field to the freezer. Visit OutdoorEdge.com and at checkout, enter the discount code NATION30 for 30% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it. This is episode 99, Live Fire with Larry White. On this episode of Huntivore, summer has finally arrived. School is out, temps are up, and outdoor cooking is back. Nick is joined by Larry White, the wild game gourmet, to chat about wild game and live fire. Larry gives some insight to meat care, making a smoke bomb to regulate your smoke output, and his go-to hardwood of choice. Nick does some investigating on Larry's DIY clay oven, gets skeptical over flavored charcoal briquettes, and gets excited over Larry's dish, Chili Colorado. Kick back and enjoy this latest episode of Huntivore. Well, hey, folks. Beautiful evening here in Michigan. I feel like our second state bird has hatched. The mosquitoes are absolutely going crazy right now. But, I'm sure that hatch will calm down. They usually do. You know, you get that first hatch and everybody's we get start getting bit and it becomes an issue, but as we go on through the summer, it'll definitely calm itself back down. You won't be as reactive to them. But tonight, we are joined with somebody who probably has good experience with mosquitoes. We are here with the Wild Game Gourmet. We are here with Larry White tonight to just have a little fireside chat. Larry, has the big hatch happened down by you? Are you dealing with the pesky critters already?
And I tell you what, usually it's horrible by now, but they did an aerial spray not too long ago, and I don't know what they sprayed, but it nuked them. This has been the mildest season I've had here.
Well, good, good. Yeah, we had just some aerial stuff happen. When Triple E, that equine virus, was going around, they got real serious about that, and they actually did some flyovers, aerial spraying for that. So, yeah, it's become a thing. They haven't done that this year, and now I'm kind of looking at it like, you know what? Maybe we make this a thing.
Yeah, it's been night and day here, man. I live right beside of a swamp, and all my friends know when they come here, you know, they're coming with full deep.
None of that the citronella stuff. No, we need the real kicker. We need the deep woods. Anything plus 50%. other piece of news that we got, just came across it's through social media, but I made sure to verify it and fact check it. It is from the area newspaper. We've got the Lone Star tick up here in Michigan
really.
Now. They've got a couple specimens down in Kalamazoo County, which is, I think, a county or two south of us. Not right where we're at, but darn near close enough to get real worried about that. Something else that's trying to suck blood off me and give me some sort of ailment. Now being that, oh man, it's going to take away my ability to have red meat. So that's a new piece of information we've got here in Michigan. I am not looking forward to having to deal with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either, man. I'm horrible with tick control. I find them on me quite often every season.
Yeah, it's with our two dogs. They end up getting on the dogs, and so we keep a real good eye on them and the kids, and just doing that kind of helps keep them off the rest of the house and stuff. But yeah, there's been times where I haven't had any bite in, but I've definitely had, like, you know, you have that one little creepy crawly that comes over a sensitive area, and you're like, oh my goodness, I think there's a tick. And then then at that point, all your pins and needles are up, and you're like, oh man, how many more are here? Because there can't just be one. I'm sure there's probably a half a dozen. But 'tis the season for everything to hatch out and want to latch on to your beautiful, sweet flesh, I feel. But Larry, how's your week been going? You were just telling me that you had a sick kiddo at home, but what else is going on in your neck of the woods?
Nothing much, man. Just trying to finish up the outdoor oven we were talking about and getting the property ready for deer season. I'm getting kind of behind, so I need to play catch up.
Gotcha. You putting out food plots, or is it just new stands that you're trying to establish? What's your game plan going on?
I live in a pretty thick, swampy area, and it's pretty overgrown. I bought a land clearing saw last year. Been trying to cut out some trails, do some thinning, plant a bunch of fruit trees, some nut trees, and just try to get a bunch of that done. I've never really gotten to the food plot thing. I think it's cool, but I think I'm trying to tackle pretty much with my property, just doing the tree game.
There you go. The habitat and being able to get the soft mass and hard mass from trees. Once that gets established, it's I don't want to say set it and forget it, but at the same time, it starts to take over, and there's a lot less maintenance. There's a lot less that goes into having to plant something in a plot. So no, I like that aspect that you're going for. I've tried to adopt a little bit of that myself, and focus more on like the habitat setup and really look at what the landscape is giving me, rather than have to cut out a whole bunch of section and then start from scratch.
Yes, it's kind of what I'm going for. I'm kind of in a, I guess you could say, weird area. We're kind of, they call it a like agriculture wasteland. Like there's not much around me. Like everything's about an hour to 2 hours away. So if you do have any kind of food plots or trees with they're bearing fruit, I mean, you're going to have the animals on your property 100%.
Gotcha. So it's really like, as far as a wasteland, it's just it's either too sandy or like you're living right next to a swamp at this point. You know, nobody can run equipment through that. So you kind of end up in this little honey hole here where you've got the habitat for you that you can use and take advantage of.
Yeah, definitely. I live next door to a regenerative agriculture farm, but you know, they do strawberries and that's about it. Everything else is like chickens, beef. And we had another nice farm across the street, and they kind of shut the doors with COVID. So, I mean, that's literally it, man.
Gotcha. So Larry, I was digging a little bit on the background of you. Really interesting story. So you went through the Coast Guard and had a chance to, you know, enlist there and serve there, and then you ventured into culinary school. What got you excited about food? If going from being on a boat to then all of a sudden wanting to go into culinary school, did your passion for food start prior to you having to find a job, or is this something you've just been around for your whole life?
Well, I was actually involved in culinary with the Coast Guard. I went to culinary school originally with the Coast Guard.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, I've always been into food. I grew up next to my grandmother, and she was a awesome cook and just threw down meals every week. Holidays were crazy. I mean, she just did above and beyond. Went to culinary school with the Coast Guard out in California, Petaluma, near wine country, which I was young and dumb at the time and didn't take advantage of it. But went to culinary school out there. Had the luxury of cooking in the Florida Keys. Ended up in Charleston, South Carolina, which is a huge culinary destination, and was on a independent duty ship, and that's kind of where everything took off. So I ran the kitchen on the boat by myself, got to make the menus and do whatever I wanted. So they were kind of like my guinea pigs for 3 years.
I like that idea. Like, you can't go anywhere else, fellas, so here you go.
Yeah, and the military food, I mean, is known for being horrible. So it's like, you know, just go ahead and experiment and throw it out there and see what happens. You know, it can't get any worse.
Yeah, it could be an MRE, and by far you're already ahead of the game there. So wild game, you had a passion for that growing up, and then getting off the boat, getting out of culinary school, then you wanted to come kind of full circle right back into your roots. What got you excited for that?
It was a multitude of things. Ended up running a food truck, got into business with a guy, opened up a restaurant, ended up not being a fit for me, so I sold my share. And around that time, my wife was pregnant. We're getting ready to have my little girl. And I'm just a workaholic, and culinary is one of those things, like as far as a restaurant field, I take pretty seriously, because you can't really half-ass anything. I mean, you have to give it your all every single day or it's going to fail. And I just knew that, and it was like, I don't know if I can keep that lifestyle up, getting home at 2 a.m. and raise a family. So I ended up getting out of that and stayed at home for a while as a stay-at-home dad. And I was, you know, hunting on my free time, and I was considering going back to teaching culinary school. And those hours are crazy too. And then I was like, man, what can I do to give back to the community that's going to fulfill me? And it was, you know, that's led me back to the wild game. And it was just like, I figured with as much knowledge as I've gained over the years that I could, you know, spread the wealth with fellow hunters.
Good deal. Yeah. I've seen just in our local area, a couple of restaurants start, and some guys that were just, they're big barbecuers. They know their way around a smoker, they know their way around a spit, but man, that jump to making it a restaurant just is one of those things. Like, if you love food, then don't start a restaurant. Find somebody else to start a restaurant for you, and then you just handle the part where you love to cook. Because yeah, that just engrosses everything that you throw at it. And so,
yeah, you got to like the business. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's right. I was just going to say, like, you got to love all sides of it. And if you're in it just for the food, man, yeah, you might as well find yourself some sort of business partner that's going to be able to handle that for you. Is that kind of what it was, where you kind of came to that point where it's like, you know what, if it's going to come to this, just as you mentioned, like, you're starting a family, you just don't have the gas for two of those things there.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, I just take culinary, you know, so serious, and the business side, you know, it was just basically, like I said, I know if I didn't give them at all, things were going to fail. And if I did, I guess my mindset is that, you know, maybe I was thinking my marriage would fail or I'd fail my kids. So I was just like, man, I just have to fully get out of the restaurant scene and just kind of walk away. I miss it. I mean, I love the industry. I could do it for the rest of my life, but I'm just not willing to sacrifice, you know, the time with my kids.
Yeah. And now it's that the door's opened up where you've been able to give back both in technique and knowledge and just inspiring other sportsmen that, you know, the idea of like venison being a one note piece of meat is no longer a thing. And to even be like, you know, there's only one thing that you do with your panfish, or there's only one thing that you do with your upland birds, like, that has gone by the wayside. And I want to say, like, Larry, you've probably been influential in that as people have been getting more and more online looking for inspiration for what they can do with their harvest. That, yeah, your Instagram is just full of amazing dishes that is hard to believe that, like, wow, that's the same venison that I got in my freezer that I could definitely do that with just a little bit of, you know, watching your reels or watching you go through a couple of your video clips. Like, man, you can take this to the absolute next level so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I tell everybody, you know, food is, for the most part, is technique driven. You know, if you learn a few simple techniques and master those, it doesn't take any time, and then you can, I mean, the world is yours, you know, create whatever you want to.
And it does. You're going to burn a few backstraps, and you're going to have a few dry pieces that you've definitely kind of overdone to the point where you're like, ah, shoot, I can't do that. Or you find a seasoning that you're like, oof, man, that just does not pair well at all. But once you get yourself a little basis, once you get yourself some wins under your belt, essentially, it's like, oh, this kind of opens some doors to, like, oh, I can now try it this way, or I can mix and match this way, and exploring different ways of providing that same either high heat or low and slow. There's 100 different implements you can use, and so just using that to your advantage. And so, yeah, I totally agree with you that technique has got to be one of those things that really kind of sets apart someone who's just getting into the game versus someone who's now like, all right, I'm full utilization on my animal here. If you had to say, like, what's one thing that would help improve sportsmen take their eating to the next level, be it technique-wise, what would be one thing that you'd want to have every sportsman do?
I would say the one thing that could reach probably every sportsman would be to let go of any, like, preconceived notions or, you know, something they were taught that you think that's true that has to be done, you know, like be flexible and be open to changing things up, because I'll still get messages from, you know, guys that I know how to cook on the Wild Game page, and trying to think, I made carne asada the other week with a backstrap, and they were like, oh man, you're gonna overcook it because it's so thin. But it's one of those things, it's like I've experimented with it, and if once you get that meat so thin and cut it so small, and if you cook it with high heat, yeah, it's got a little bite to it, but it's actually still pretty tender versus if you had the full piece of meat, you know, a full steak, like a 4 or 6 ounce steak, and cooked that well done. That's two totally different products. That one's going to be like shoe leather.
Exactly. Now, that's the one where you basically, I don't want to say butterfly because it's similar to butterfly, but you make an incision to get yourself in, and then you were rolling out to the left and then using your knife to be able to just to draw out that piece of meat, so you're sheeting out this back strap. Is that that's essentially what you were doing on that dish at that point?
Yeah. Like if you Google any like sushi chefs kind of breaking down a cucumber into like a long strip, or just search for like a roulade, like how you would roll up a piece of meat. That's essentially what you're doing. But if you look up the cucumber deal, that'll show you what you can do with it. And those guys are crazy good with knives.
Oh yeah, the Japanese chef behind the counter there with his sushi knife, man, they are artists at that point. Well, that's cool that you got the Asada going out. You're trying something completely different with the backstrap. That yeah, people that are set in their ways are gonna. What are you doing? No, don't do that. It's like, just hold on, fellas. There's more that meets the eye when it comes to that preparation.
Yeah, and another trick I learned, I mean, this was probably 15 years ago. It was pretty simple, but great. It was off the Food Network or something. So Aaron Sanchez was saying that all he did with his, besides the seasonings, how he marinated his carne asada was with the pickled jalapeno juice. And to me, it sounded silly, and I tried it. And it really does. It gives the meat an awesome flavor, and it tenderizes it pretty well. And that's another little trick for guys that want to, or gals that want to cook their carne asada.
I like it. I like it. The pickling note, whether it be into, you know, the dill pickle, or whether it even be into the jalapeno at that point, that brine can be more use than just the one note of sitting in your fridge the whole time. You can put that stuff to work. That's a great tip.
Oh yeah, our burger sauce at the restaurant I had. I mean, one of the main ingredients in that we made our own pickles in house, and we would use some of the juice to make the mayo that went on the burger. That was phenomenal.
This one's going to be tough. This is probably going to ruffle a few feathers. What is one thing that you would wish sportsmen would stop doing with their wild game?
I would say another one that I see a lot of folks doing that, I mean, the food's still edible, but it would be icing down your meat in coolers and then like having the meat on the bottom and it just kind of like soaking in water. I feel like besides overcooking your meat, that's like the number one rule that I see being broken. Not that it's a rule, but I mean, you're just doing some some disservice to your meat.
Really is waterlogging it down. I talked with a few fellas out of Missouri, and that was the whole thing that they did. They filled it up with water, dropped the quarters in, and then they threw ice on top. And they were asking, like, well, what can we do to help improve our venison? I was like, well, stop doing that immediately. And we had to talk a little bit about through it. And I said, well, you know, don't let that water penetrate into that meat, because you're gonna waterlog that down, and it's gonna, yes, like just like you said, it's gonna be a huge disservice. And so having them separate that to have the meat on top with the ice below and have a layer in between that, either a piece of plastic, something just to keep their quarters off the bare ice. You want to get it cooled down, and I understand that they're in an environment far different than we are here in Michigan at that time of year. They're dealing with 70s and 80s and a whole bunch of humidity. As well as in the Carolinas, it's kind of, for refrigeration is at a premium, whereas if we get a good cold spell here in Michigan, we can just let our deer hang for, you know, a good week and a half without having a problem. So location is going to definitely play with that, but I'm really glad to hear you say, like, yeah, get that meat up off that ice, out of that water, and treat this like it should be, like it should be a prize, and not just kind of swimming in water trying to leech out the gamey. As they were trying to do.
Yeah. If you get on the local forums, they kind of treat it as a technique of getting rid of the gamey, as you were saying. They think that the ice water soaking in the meat releases the blood, and they just kind of repeat that process until the meat's been soaked in water and drained like 5 or 6 times. And they think that makes the meat better, which, I mean, if it tastes better to them, more power to them, but it's not for me.
Well, Larry, we're coming into a spot here in a beautiful time of year. There's maybe a couple seasons that are still open. Definitely not here in Michigan. It's going to be all angling all the time right now. Everybody's getting boats out on the water, and seasons are going to be opening up for fish here very soon. But one thing that's getting me really exciting is the influx of live fire cooking. Like, everybody's getting out ready to grill. Everybody's ready to get out to smoke something. This weekend being Memorial Day weekend when we're recording this podcast, I can tell you there's already an army of guys that are buying. I saw them today at the hardware store buying up the charcoal, filling up the propane, getting their wood pellets. Like, it is going to be time come here this weekend that we are going to have live fire cooking. Is that a big thing down there in the Carolinas? Is this weekend kind of like the big kickoff, or have you guys been grilling for a little while?
I've been grilling for a little while. I mean, I guess I'm kind of weird for a Southern person. I actually love grilling in the winter and the fall, and I grill throughout the year, but that's those are my favorite seasons. But things do start picking up as a whole here. A lot of barbecues, like in, you know, hog cookery, and that kind of deal are getting ramped up this weekend.
Yeah. As far as fuel goes, there's, you know, wood chunk where guys are literally cooking that down for, and those are on those big whole hog cookers. They're going to be using that red oak. They're going to be using, well, at least on the briskets, they're going to be using the mesquite. So there's the wood side of it. Charcoal, I find myself kind of living right there in charcoal world right now. That really gets me excited. I've been dealing with a lot with a lump charcoal right now. I tried some of those cylinders. It's basically like a briquette, but instead they compress it down into these cylinders that are a little longer, a little bigger. Not as happy with those for a number of reasons. But then there's also then guys loading up on the propane, getting their gas grills going. What fuel gets you the most excited, Larry, when you're getting ready to either go out to the grill or go out to the smoker or wherever you're heading out into? What fuel gets you fueled up?
Mainly oak. I mean, we use a lot of oak around here, and I like to do blends. Have you ever heard of a smoke bomb? It's kind of cheating.
No. Tell me about a smoke bomb.
So basically, if you're unsure to how to control your fire and what to add in and when, you can kind of, let's say you're starting off with oak. They actually sell the little cast iron contraptions where you can throw in I throw in dried herb stems that I saved from the garden from last year. You can put those in there, and basically that's enclosed in a cast iron box. You can use aluminum foil and roll that up and poke holes in it. And once that heats up, you'll kind of have smoke that's permeating out of that cast iron contraption or aluminum foil, and you'll kind of get smoke flavor out of that. And you can use teas, hay, herb stems, any of that stuff.
Gotcha. So instead of just throwing, because I'll soak like wood chips or whatever if I'm going to really add a smokiness, and then throw that right onto the coals, and I do find that I go through a lot more chips quickly because they're getting lit up far quicker. But you're saying roll those up in a little envelope of aluminum foil, poke some holes in there, and that's going to help draw out my smoke time at that point. I'm going to get much more smoke production versus throwing them right there on the charcoal.
Yep. And if you're using thin aluminum foil, just kind of double or triple wrap it, and that works for wood chips, and then also expands for other seasonings you want to put inside of that envelope to throw some different flavors on your food.
Nice. I like that idea. I've seen it, but nobody's ever explained it as in being a smoke bomb. Like that.
Yeah, we first used them in culinary school. We would do like tea and hay smoked duck. And I kind of got the idea from there, and I ended up doing a couple Thanksgiving turkeys like that probably about 15 or so years ago, and just kind of stuck with it and messed around with it.
I like it. Hay, using like alfalfa at that point. What kind of smell are we getting off of hay smoke? What notes are we getting from that?
Man, it's just like a earthy kind of, like, I don't want to say grass. I mean, it does. It kind of has like a grassy. I don't know have you ever just smelled like a dry grass? I mean, when the hay's being cut, it just has that true earthy smell, and it just, for me, it goes perfect with pork.
Good deal.
I know it sounds weird, but
no, it's fine. I was like, wow, really, just using hay, and like I see the herb stems. That would be something that you could probably get a little something from that. Good friend of mine also said, like, too, like, when it comes to, like, smoking things, like, after a while, like, it all tastes like smoke. You know, only a true connoisseur can be able to tell the difference between what element was used to smoke that, whether it be hardwood or a fruit wood, which particular fruit wood that was. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not that good enough to be able to notice that much about the smoke. But at the same time, like, reaching out and maybe getting away from necessarily a hardwood and into, like you said, those grasses and teas, like, I'm sure that just has a whole new unique flavor that you could add.
Yeah, those are much more pronounced, especially if you're dealing with things like duck or you know, even if you're cooking, you don't eat wild game, you're doing chicken, and you know, any of that stuff will pick up the flavor pretty well, and fish as well.
Ooh, that would be really good. Doing like something like a tea on, you know, a side of a walleye or something, that sounds really good.
Yeah, if you have a I don't have one anymore, but if you have a pellet grill, that's for fish. I mean, that's super, super easy. Kind of just throw your fish in a pan with some butter and let the smoke setting rock on, you know, gently, and I mean, you can have a super flavorful piece of fish.
Good deal, good deal. I don't have a pellet grill, but my brother-in-law now does. So essentially, I'm going to be half owner of a pellet grill here pretty soon, because he's already asking, "Hey, what can I do on this? What can I do on this thing?" Oh, you wait, buddy. We'll do plenty. We'll do plenty.
They're versatile. I wish I could use them. I mean, they're good to have. You know, just if you need something fast to, you know, to get your meal on the table, or to get your temperature set. But the humidity here, man, like I couldn't. I got my pellets from every source I could find, and it's just the humidity down here just destroys them.
Oh, geez. They start deteriorating on the falling apart on you?
Yeah, I couldn't keep a consistent temperature. I ended up sending every part of my mine back and replacing them, just thinking it was something wrong with my grill, and ended up being, to my knowledge, just the pellets. I couldn't get any quality pellets around here.
Gotcha, gotcha. Yeah, I do like to poke fun at the pellet grill. It's like I refer to it as the easy bake oven, and how, you know, a true grill doesn't need to be plugged into the house or an outlet. It can stand alone on its own. So I do like to poke fun, and mainly because I don't have one, and I think that's why I can make those side comments. I'm sure all my stories would change if I ever were to get one. But yeah, now I'm at a point too where I'm like, oh shoot, I don't think I can cross that border right now.
Yeah, I mean, they have their place, but if I had to choose, I'm going the natural way.
There you go. Speaking of unnatural, and I almost picked one up today, and I didn't, mainly because I wouldn't be able to get after trying it out, at least not soon enough. Have you seen the flavored briquettes where they, and it's Kingsford that has come out with these, and they have like three or four like blends of flavors. One of them was like, it's like chipotle and garlic briquette. Like it's literally a charcoal briquette, but they've infused a bunch of this flavoring into it. And you're supposed to light it, and it's supposed to then change the profile of the smoke that you're adding to your burgers or your steaks or whatever you're making. Have you seen this product yet?
I saw advertisement for it, and I was kind of looking into it, and I guess it's a good idea. I don't know if I would try it. I mean, if one of my buddies was cooking with it, I mean, I would, you know, I'd be all about it. But I don't know. I guess for me, like, coming from culinary, you know, field, it's just like, I guess immediately to me, it's like, man, this thing's going to make my steak taste like it came from Applebee's or something.
Yeah, the bourbon style steak isn't necessarily where the route that you want to go with, or the Bourbon Street Grill. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, I would try it, but I don't think I would buy it.
Yeah, I'm super skeptical, and for the reason of, like, I didn't go to culinary school, but I try to soak up as much as I can from folks who did, and, you know, going onto blogs and reading stuff, and I'm finding, like, when it does come to, like, seasonings, there's some of them rely on, like, an essential oil, especially to say, like, things from the pepper and, from the pepper family, and even a lot of, like, the green herbs and stuff that they get, there's a heat range. And one specifically I'm thinking of is, like, black pepper, that it uses that essential oil. Once you've cracked that that little corn and release that oil onto your steak or whatever that you're adding that on, it's going to go to work to spread that flavor. But if you put it again back on, if you pre-season with the black pepper and then go to the grill, you're essentially going to burn off that essential oil, rendering that pepper useless. Like, at that point, you're not going to taste it as pronounced. It's been burned off. But now we get to the point now where we're going to try to take some of these flavors and put them into a briquette that I'm going to light on fire and get to a very high heat. I understand that they're trying to use those elements to then create smoke, but I feel like at that point it's going to be a burnt smoke at that point. It's going to be a far different than, like, a flavor smoke where, man, we have now incinerated that flavor, and what's coming off is going to be something that's, yeah, like you said, not exactly natural. So that's where my hang up was. I'm like, I feel like whatever you've added in there is now just going to go up in flame.
Yeah, I figure if you're going to go, if you like tinkering with your food and trying to add flavors, and if you're going to go that route and spend that kind of money, you know, multiple times, I would just nerd out and buy you the smoking handguns. They're like $80 or $90, and you can add stuff to the little port and basically kind of cold smoke your food after it's cooked, and it does work. I've used it for multiple things, and it's kind of nerdy, but it adds flavor, and you don't have to keep buying bags of charcoal that are flavored.
There you go. Well, good. I'm glad. I feel like that my skepticalness is now shared. That, not to call out Kingsford for being a gimmick, they make a great briquette, and that seems to be the one that I go for every time when I just need a quick briquette to take to the campsite or even for the grill. But at the same time, going as far as to be like, I don't think that I'm gonna get the garlic taste or the garlic smoke from something that I'm now turning into basically a glowing red amber. I don't think I'm going to get exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think I might have to talk one of my friends into buying that stuff. See what it's all about.
Yeah, oh, yeah, man, I heard all about it. You should give it a try. When in the field, accuracy and precision count. That's why we switch our slug guns to rifle barrels, tune our arrows, and use a fish finder on the water. But why should our drive for control end there? The Tappacue line of meat probes gives an instantaneous look at the temperatures of our prized meals, both internal and the cooking chamber. Tappacue uses sturdy hardware made and assembled here in the U.S., along with their user-friendly, sophisticated software that connects to your smart device. Whether it's a traditional corded probe or the new cordless air probes that give you a wealth of freedom where wires would just get in the way, adding a Tappacue meat probe can significantly help in getting to that medium rare on venison or waterfowl, ensuring your upland bird stays moist, or even charting your long cooks on a smoker. Visit Tappacue.com or find the link in the show notes and use the code HUNT10, all uppercase, at checkout to save 10%. Adding a probe to your kit can make you one tap away from your cue. Well, speaking of gimmicks, let's talk about clay ovens. I feel like any dude that is going to be going head deep into creating not only his own vessel, but the fact of how permanent this thing is going to be. If you haven't checked out the Wild Game Gourmet's Instagram page, or you haven't found out about Larry and what he's making, you should definitely take a look at this. You are creating an outdoor clay oven, Larry. This thing is super cool. Talk to me about what inspired you to now create this oven.
I mean, I've wanted one for at least 20 years. I was, A, back in the day, I didn't have the money to buy one, and B, I just, the knowledge, you know, if the information really wasn't out there that I knew of to build one. But now there's some experts online that you can learn how to build these things, and kind of once you dive into it, you know, these structures, the materials that are used for them have been around for so long, and the techniques that, I mean, it's, I don't know, man, it's just easy and straightforward. I mean, I just figured, why not?
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things, like, all of a sudden, like, it was built out of necessity, but now it's become a luxury for us in this modern age, because we've got so many other efficient ways of cooking things, but at the same time, something is definitely lost in how efficient something is done. But then when it comes to an old world style of trying to bring back a dish or to bring back a cooking style, like, nothing says, you know, nothing says better than home cooking than you've got dirt under your nails, or you've literally, like, slathering clay over a form. And that's essentially what you've got here. If I'm going to describe it to our listeners here, essentially you've got, like, a bottom plate that's going to be flat, and you've been then just mounding layer after layer of clay into this dome shape. Is there a chimney out the back? Is there some sort of relief out the back, or is it just the port in the front where all the air is just going to get exchanged?
So there's a small chimney about 8 inches behind the door, and you can basically use that. You can close the door and then use that that port. Or you can just leave everything wide open and run it like that. I don't think I'll do too much, like, true baking with it. I mean, I'm definitely going to do some cornbread and some flatbreads and pizzas and stuff, but I don't know if I'll do any, like, true baking in it.
Gotcha. That's the purpose of it, is just to be an outdoor clay oven. Like, you mentioned some of the baking that's going in there. What are a couple dishes that you're like, this is going to be dish number 1, 2, and 3 that's going in there? What are your top three that you're like, as soon as this thing is up and running, that is what I'm making?
Being from the South, definitely probably some cornbread. I live in, like, corn central here. We've got Anson Mills, which is a phenomenal farm that grows heirloom grains. And we've got Marsh Hen Mill that has some great corn. They do some old school stuff. They've got Jimmy Red Corn, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with the famous Southern chef, Sean Brock. That was a corn that was basically almost extinct. He ended up getting some seed from somewhere and kind of bringing it back to life. And that's one of the best corn meals you'll ever put in your mouth.
Gotcha. Name that again for me.
The Jimmy Red Corn.
Okay, gotcha. No, I had not heard of him or bringing back a whole variety. That's a super cool story.
Yeah, he's basically kind of the chef that revived southern cooking. He's just an awesome guy. Like, if you look him up, man, he's done awesome things for the culinary world. So, yeah, cornbread would be number one. I would have to say. Probably, I don't know, man, probably like have a braised wild hog shoulder or something like that, and then finish that thing off in there with some good smoke and get a nice char on it at a high heat.
Sweet. And then that's going to all be wood heat. It's going to be all wood that basically you're going to create that wood fire in there. So that's where your oak and yeah, your oaks are going to take over in that, or is it going to be charcoal base? How do you plan on fueling that thing?
For the oven, I'm going to use all wood that I've cut off of the property here. I've got a spot on there where it's essentially kind of like burn grates. So you start your fire and let the coals fall to the bottom. That's how I'll do all my fires for the most part, unless I'm in a pinch for the oven. But for the live fire station, I don't know if you've seen like the fire break walls that I have on there, or windbreak rather. I'll probably use some charcoal in there.
Gotcha. Quite a bit. Good deal. Yeah, you like you were just saying, like using the wood cut from the property, used to fuel to make something off of that. A couple years ago, I was able to smoke. I took down a peach tree that just wasn't it. It was here when I bought the house, and the trunk had already split, and the one side was growing, the other side was dead, and I got like two peaches off the one. And I tried to prune it one year to see if I couldn't like get that one side of the trunk to come back, but it was just too far gone as far as being a producing tree. It was also just getting become a hassle to mow around. So I ended up cutting that thing down. But it was a spot for deer. They would end up pulling off the leaves from it. And so the year that I did cut it down, I ended up taking a doe not too far from our house. And so to put all that together, I was smoking a shoulder with the peach wood from that tree. And I was just like, this is what locavore is all about. This is about pulling off of your own piece of property and being able to sustain yourself. Like that happened all within, you know, 50 to 60 yards where this tree grew. This deer probably munched on maybe the few of the small green peaches. And so to have that same thing where now you've got an oven that you're going to be fueling with the fire from the property and possibly on a piece of wild game that was taken off the property. I don't know. That stuff just gets me super excited.
Yeah, man, I'm pretty old school at heart. I mean, that's one of the main things I'm looking for. Like I literally hunt pigs 50 yards from that oven. So my property's overrun with them. So yeah, there'll be some property at a table going on.
I like it. Well, hey, I'm bringing us down into our two dish breakdown.
Okay, this is it.
Steaks cooked medium rare.
Can I get my steak cooked?
That
just
want no question.
You hungry? Hey, Ma! Can we get some meatloaf?
We're Team Demoji, and you heard Demoji.
Come on, get it!
This breakdown is where I'm going to have you really just walk us through a dish that you either really like or you would like to serve. And I've got some criteria here that's going to help us out. But from that, you're going to also have to like let us know all the details that go along with it. We can't let you just skirt on by. So I've got two dishes here. The first one is maybe a little bit outside the box of wild game, but as we get outside, wanting to add more char, add more smoky flavor and use our live fire, we do like to experiment with desserts that we're going to bring in that sweet element. Could you break down a dessert that you would either make on the grill or even in your fancy new oven?
Yeah, I would say my number one go-to that I've never had one person complain is either you can do these on the grill, you can do these on a wood-fired planchette, you can do them in the oven. It's kind of like a charred or griddled peach. You kind of get those really, really caramelized. You can speed that up by putting some sugar on there, man, but just get those nice and charred and kind of tender and serve those with a caramel sauce that you can actually make in a pan over the fire as well. I usually do like a, might sound funny to some people, like a rosemary caramel.
Ooh.
And it's super easy to put together. I mean, it takes, you know, less than 15 minutes. But I usually top those off together. And especially for a hot summer, man, throw that with some vanilla ice cream, man, you're good to go. And And if you're from the South, it might not seem as weird, but you can throw a little bit of a little crispy country ham.
Oh, there you go. Weird. What do I want to say? Not the heat, but the savory side. So you got the savory and the sweet playing off of each other. I like that.
Yeah, that's a big thing where I'm at. And that might sound weird to some people, but that'll set that dessert right off.
Oh, man. I could see that. Like, we enjoy shortcake up here in Michigan. It's the one note. It's the strawberry shortcake. But I could see this even going easily to, fire braised or, charred up peaches instead of those strawberries on a nice piece of biscuit with some whipping cream on top, or the traditional go-to French vanilla ice cream. Can't go wrong there. But I like the idea of even adding in the rosemary. I think that would really play off well.
Yeah, it's super good, man. I even make a homemade caramel corn. I might have this on the site. I don't remember, but I would do a homemade caramel corn. I've actually made it with duck fat, and you can throw some rosemary in there to infuse it, and I'll kind of put some crumbled bacon on there, and that stuff's phenomenal too.
Jeez, oh, Pete's, that it doesn't sound just good. It sounds dangerous. That's a bowl. Yeah, you go through a whole bowl of that, and I'm going to be looking for more.
But and you can cheat too. Like if you just wanted to make the peaches, you can buy pre-made caramel sauce. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And then just throw some rosemary and caramel in there in the pan together or the microwave and just let that seep. And you'll get some nice flavors to there. And you don't have to spend all the time making your homemade sauce.
Gotcha. So for the folks that are looking for the easy route, that's the route to go with.
Hey, there's an art to sandbagging.
I feel like that's a quote to live by, Larry. That's wonderful.
It's like I'm going to get into that more, like, you know, with my account, but I just feel like everybody, you know, my page name says Wild Game Gourmet, so everything doesn't need to be fancy. Like I would like to find some products that are pre-made that are actually pretty good that you can infuse yourself and kind of put to another level.
Yeah. Well, things got to be done, like, especially when you're making something like a whole meal, there's a timing element. You got to get things on and off and either chilled or heated up. And there's anytime you can find a shortcut. One thing I learned was that not a whole lot of chefs even continue to make their own pastry dough just because of the time that goes into it. And with as good as we've gotten to be able to make pastry dough from the factory, you're probably getting the better of the end there by not making something with that much effort into it. Because at that point, there's so much that you're going to screw up with that if you're going to make something with pastry dough, you might as well just buy that from the store.
Yeah, unless I have like a free day to fully dedicate to a dessert or something. I mean, I'm buying it. And if you go to specialty stores now, they have different varieties and flavorings of pie crust and all that stuff. I mean, there's no really reason to make your own unless you just have a special recipe you want to use, special occasion, or if you have a free day.
Yeah. All right, this last one here. This one's going to come with a little more weight. It is going to be wild game based, but I'm going to leave it to the hoof, the feather, or the snout, whatever direction you want to go with. But here's the criteria. It is your last meal request. For some odd reason, Larry, you've been put on death row, and we've had enough of the wild game gourmet. But we've granted you one last meal, and you get to describe what gets to be made for you. What is going to be that last meal?
If it's wild game, I would have to say probably a venison neck in the style of probably like, I love Mexican food, so probably like a chile colorado. Something really very hearty, just going to bring back memories of childhood of gorging myself with Mexican food. But yeah, man, if it's wild game, I mean, something like that, I think that's my go-to, yeah.
Yeah.
Chile colorado, some good beans, some rice, homemade tortillas, and I would be set.
Lay out for me the Colorado style. I'm not familiar with that.
There's different ways, but it's kind of like a hearty red sauce that, you know, has chilies in there. It's got a little bit of bite, like heat, but not too much. It's mild. I mean, if I could try to compare it to something people eat all the time at your standard Mexican restaurant, I would say it's like a darker chili flavor tasting, almost like enchilada sauce, but thicker, okay. More concentrated, and robust.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, something sounds like you'd ladle that on something that wouldn't necessarily be the base of what you were eating, but you would ladle that over. Is that where am I getting that completely off base?
Yeah, I mean, so traditionally when you're eating it, it's almost like, I don't know. I mean, it would almost be like your meat, if you're eating your protein, kind of swimming in a gravy, but it's kind of finished off in that. You know, you don't necessarily have to cook it in there the entire time, but you at least want it, that meat to soak that sauce up.
Gotcha. So you're going with the Colorado chili for your last meal. Are you gonna accompany that with some of that your cornbread? How would I go about making good North Carolina cornbread?
It's pretty straightforward, man. Like, I don't probably pissing people off. I don't, no flour, as in wheat flour, no sugar. It's buttermilk, salt, pepper, pork fat. Feel free to add some bacon. I mean, that's it. And high heat. You want a super hot oven. Get that nice crispy crust. Sweet cornbread's a sin in my book. Sorry.
Oh man, there's probably a few restaurants up here, chain restaurants, that you'd be like, nope, we can't eat here. No, but we can't step foot in here. That's all on that sweet side. But I'm glad to know that you're sticking with the basic savory too, because there is a great spot for that in cooking. Sometimes I feel like we're so accustomed to sweet and sugar that we have to make everything sweet and sugary. Whereas, you know what, if you leave it out, it might even be better.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, when it comes to like, you know, true Southern food, man, like I have to stick. I'm usually old school, man. Like, I like sticking to the roots.
Well, good deal. Larry, this has been fun talking with you, getting a chance to know you, getting some inspiration for folks as we get outside and wanting to use, just being outside to cook, using our wild game to the best of our ability. Where can folks find you? Where can folks get a chance to see what you're doing, ask you questions? I want to give you like 30 seconds. Just where can we engage with you?
I'm mainly active on Instagram, Wild Game Gourmet. I have a website, thewildgamegourmet.com. You can message me on either one. I'm down to answer any questions you guys have. I actually have just joined Outdoor Class. That's they're partners with Go Hunt, and we're going to be launching an outdoor e-learning platform.
Oh, cool.
So I'll be a part of that. So if there's, you know, there'll be a few wild game chefs on there teaching certain techniques and recipes. There'll be, I think, Randy Newberg's on there, Remy Warren. They'll be teaching elk hunting and all that stuff. So that'll be another spot you'll be able to find us on. And I'm not sure the launch date of that yet, but I would say within the next year.
Well, awesome. Man, this whole venture of you being able to just share your passion with other sportsmen is just really taking off. So I'm excited to see you on there and engage with you through that platform. That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I actually just sent out a kind of a roll call. I'm not spilling too many beans yet, but I'm trying to throw together a podcast that's wild game focused. It's nothing that's out there right now. I think it'll be fun, and it'll kind of build a community. Actually, we're trying to get some, not applications, but, you know, if anybody's interested in possibly being a co-host, and you've got a strong wild game presence, give me a shout. I'm probably going to have something in the works here in the next month or two.
Well, perfect. Well, Larry, this has been a wonderful hour to just get a chance to connect with you. I'm going to have you hold on for just a second as I send our listeners on out. Well, folks, this has been a great little hour here that we've got a chance to talk with Larry. As we get excited here to be cooking outside, we want to bring our wild game out and be able to show it off. We want to be able to pizzazz it up, be it the grill, be it the smoker, or even those fancy easy bake, pellet grills. You can get a chance to enjoy that, and just make sure that you're really trying to then elevate your wild game, make it the best that you can, but at the same time, with the device that you're using, the implements that you're bringing along with you, be it your favorite knife, that thing had better be sharp.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.